Welcome back. You're with Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Now, we recently looked at the new craft culture in the form of the Wellington-based Craft 2.0 group, which is all about knowledge workers making things with their hands. But what say you have a brilliant idea for an object, but no means of physically producing it? Well, Wellington's got that covered too. Pinoco, a company founded by David Ten Hav and Sally Coe, aims to provide the means to turn concepts into reality. I met up with them at, where else, a Wellington cafe. Pinoco, have I pronounced it right?
You have indeed. Pinoco is correct, yes.
Where does the name come from? Is it?
It's kind of unglamorous. I took Paniki, which is a Maori word for Wellington, I think particularly over the hill, and I just swapped vowels out until I got a .com. So that's how it evolved. It turns out that it is a family name for some people in the United States, and I think there's even a town in Canada called Pinoco. But that's about as sophisticated as the naming process was.
Mm. And what does Pinoco do?
The best way to think of us is as an online factory. What we're providing is a bit of software that allows people to get stuff made, essentially. And furthermore, they're able to then sell that stuff to the rest of the world. So the basic idea is that as long as someone is able to describe their product as a set of files, we're able to produce the end result, or at least the parts. Now, there are kind of two modes, I guess. There is the idea that someone else makes the product, i.e. there's some assembly that needs to go on later on, or it's delivered to the end customer with assembly instructions, kind of like IKEA.
Well, was the idea demand-driven? Did you know people who had design ideas but not the, you know, the facilities or the wherewithal to actually make something concrete?
Yeah. Well, yeah, a little of both, I guess. It came from a personal frustration that I had. My background is in software development, so I'm used to sitting down in front of a computer and getting something done. It turned out that when you went into the real world, that's much, much more difficult. When you start dealing with atoms, it's really difficult. So the demand was my own. I wanted to make something. But the other part of it was that I was involved in a number of carbon economy projects and have been, well, in 2006 anyway, and really started thinking about some of the fundamental issues and how those fundamental issues changed trade. And it was the combination of those things that got us to here.
Well, was there an element of it? I mean, for example, it's something we're seeing in the States, and it's been identified by O'Reilly with Make and Craft magazines, of knowledge workers actually wanting to do something hands-on and
correct.
Concrete. Was that an issue for
That's
you?
That's right, exactly. You know, I'd gone to a point where I wanted to create real things. I discovered that it wasn't unusual. You know, like you say, Make Zine and Craft Zine, you know, really are the magazines of the moment for those movements. But the tools that exist are, well, in comparison to software tools, for instance, not as easy to use. And so it was driven by that.
Of course, it's one thing to say, we'll make your design, but
yes.
Actually being able to execute that, I presume, is pretty challenging. I mean,
correct.
What have you had to do in the months? Is it about a year you've been?
It's been about a year. We've been really seriously working for about 6 months now. We've been thinking about it for about a year. One of the key things is establishing the limitations. And in that respect, it's really analogous to any other computing platform. You know, as long as you can delineate the edges of what can be done, and you can tell people how to operate within those boundaries, you've got something that you can deliver to people. So the real challenge was working out what those limitations are. So the limitations for us are only certain types of file formats and only certain types of materials, so sheet plastic and sheet wood. But over time, we want to start adding more and more functionality and expand those limitations out.
Hmm. You've got Sue Tyler involved, who was part of the Craft 2.0 thing, and that seems to be quite a lively area as well.
Yes.
Do you see that that new craft thing as being complementary to what you're doing?
Oh, I think it's absolutely vital to what we're doing. What the Craft 2.0 environment represents is the vanguard of this movement. You know, it's people who have gone out there, who have done the hard work and have delivered something. You know, these are people who have moved beyond talking and have delivered end product, and even more excitingly, they're selling end product. So it's absolutely vital. They, you know, they do really represent the beachhead for us at Pinoco.
So what's the process? Someone has a design, they've done the right file formats, you know what they need. What happens next?
They create what we call an online factory. And an online factory is a specification of materials against designs. We then source the materials, and we source the materials in a just-in-time manner. So, you know, we're trying to keep this as efficient as possible. We then take their design files. We then machine the parts, and then we deliver the machine parts to them. So in that respect, it's quite straightforward.
Is there scope for people to come in at the other side of the process, people who maybe have workshops and tools that could be used? So you're putting together makers with designers?
Correct. So while we've got, you know, while we're focusing on setting up a degree of infrastructure ourselves, simply so we can deliver on the promise, we want to design a system that allows, you know, selected third parties, obviously, to come on board and assist in that making process. We really see ourselves setting up a bit of an enabler for a value chain. Everything that starts, or, you know, everything between the designer and the customer. And software allows us to do that. And third parties can ideally come in at most points along that process.
So where's the customer going to see this stuff? You know, where's the money?
The money is in the, as we see it, in the ability to be able to advertise the product in MySpace type environments. So what we're really taking is the concept of a showroom and kind of smearing it across, you know, the community side of things. You know, we've built tools that are similar to the YouTube video embedding link. So you can embed your product in a blog, or you could embed your product in a website. And then sitting in behind that is the e-commerce facilities to allow you to purchase the product and then have the product delivered to you.
Right. I can imagine that it would also be useful for people for prototyping.
Correct.
It seems like it's really suitable for
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah. All of these technologies have come out of the prototyping environment. We're just repurposing them, basically. You know, for us, we look at the creative field as being quite broad. You know, we've got some, you know, the professional designers that are coming out of the schools now. We've got the craft people. You know, we've got crazy Robo One, you know, designers in Japan creating bits. And then, you know, we've got some guy, you know, in his garage creating a head gasket for some, you know, very obscure engine. It's got that kind of breadth to it.
So, Sal, what's your role in it? What do you do?
I'm the user experience guardian. So what that means is I've gone through quite a set of interviews with makers and designers and crafters. So that's been my role, is to really understand those people, get inside their heads and try and see what they need from the product. So in quite an iterative way for us, and I have to work out how to make those iterations meet with their expectations.
So who are those people? Are they young, old, male, female?
Yeah, it's not quite as simple as, or black and white as that. They're across kind of a very wide community, so it's not so much age specific, maybe experience specific might be a good way to describe that. But the people I've interviewed have been artists, picture framers, people making t-shirts from the back of their, you know, studio, in the back of their house. Also, I've interviewed industrial designers, so people have a lot more experience. And so there's a very large scale of people.
So what did you come away knowing that people wanted after, you know, that?
Sorry?
What do people want?
What do people want? Well, it depends what their goal is. If their goal is to make something and get Pinoco to help them through that making process, then that's one goal. On the other hand, they might have a specific goal to have make components. So they may want certain parts made up rather than a whole design, and Pinoco allows for that expansion of many different goals. So that's the process for me, is going out, talking to people and assimilating all of that information and then sharing that with the group, because long term we have to be able to hold on to the loyalty of those people too. So, you know, Sue's involved for that community aspect and really setting that up.
If you think you're one of those people, you can check out Pinoco and perhaps even participate in a beta program that'll run up to the full launch later this year at pinoco.com. That's P-O-N-O-K-O. And we'll be back after the break with some trash television that made its way to the big screen.